The Hilltop Glove Podcast is sponsored by Mid-Carolina Service Company.
Mid-Carolina Service Company is the first name to search for your residential or commercial HVAC needs in Lexington and surrounding areas.
Just go holler at Jason and Clint. They'll hook you up on the air conditioners, on the restaurant equipment, refrigerators, refrigeration, ice machine repair. They've been doing this for years. I know them cats forever.
Family owned and operated since 2006, they pride themselves in their quality work and customer relationships. Call 803-356-4153 or visit midcarolinaserviceco.com for no obligation quote for service today. This episode of Hilltop Glove Podcast is brought to you by the Simon Marketing Agency. Turn an ordinary business into an extraordinary one since 2020. Simon James and his team do the hard work of attracting new customers so you can focus on making your business exceptional. As a brand marketing expert, Simon specializes in creating a unique and unforgettable identity for your business. From generating awareness to captivating content creation and strategic advertising, Simon Marketing Agency has you covered. Elevate your business today. Give them a call at 843-942-8880 or email them at simon@smasimon.com. Visit them at www.simonmarketing.agency. Make sure to follow them on Instagram at BrandSimonTV.
This episode of the Hilltop Glove Podcast is sponsored by Bob's. Bob's is a Columbia-based retailer of over 100 Black-owned products from 20 Black-owned businesses. Bob's offers a wide range of items from household cleaning, cosmetics, and everything in between. With every visit to Bob's, you support the Black-owned businesses, giving them the opportunity to grow and establish connections with our community. Bob's is located inside the Noma Warehouse at 2222 Sumter Street in Columbia, South Carolina. Visit their website, WeShopBops.com, for in-store pickup or to find out more. Bops can also be found via social media on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at WeShopBops. When you stop by, tell them the Hilltop Glove sent you. Bops brings quality Black brands to the Columbia community. The Hilltop Glove Podcast is sponsored by True Brilliance Entertainment.
True Brilliance is a production, promotions, and management company dedicated to connecting artists and producers across the Carolinas to music industry professionals.
Several of their clients have placements both domestic and internationally as a result of their services.
Are you an artist or producer looking to build meaningful relationships within the music industry? Then True Brilliance is for you. Check them out at paramilitary.com. That's spelled P-A-I-R-A military.com.
Welcome to the Hilltop Glove Podcast.
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 The Hilltop Glove Podcast.
Welcome to the Hilltop Glove Podcast, where we bring you inspiring stories of individuals and organizations making a positive impact in our communities. Today, we are honored to have Patsy Gardner, the Executive Director of a Second Chance Resource Center Network. Located in Charleston, South Carolina, Second Chance Resource Center is a nonprofit organization that serves former felons, families of felons, and anyone struggling with substance abuse. Their mission is to empower justice-involved individuals and families by providing reentry case management services. They use a holistic approach that includes parenting education, job readiness, career planning, tutoring and mentoring, financial literacy, and education on arts and culture. With over 25 years in program training and community outreach, ASCRC and its staff have provided leadership to address and promote issues concerning the life journey of the justice-involved individual and their families. They also have a transitional house called the Phoenix House, and that is for males who are being released from incarceration as well as young adults aging out of foster care. We are excited to hear more about Patsy's experience with ASCRC and their work in the Tri-County communities of Charleston, Berkeley, and Dorchester counties, as well as the Low Country communities of Allendale, Bamberg, Barnwell, Beaufort, Colleton, Jasper, and Hampton in the state of South Carolina. Thank you for joining us today. How are you doing, Ms. Patsy?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. My voice is a little out because I just finished homecoming at St. Augustine's University with my sorors after 35 years celebrating Delta Sigma Theta. So this is how I came back. So please excuse my voice.
No, you're fine. You are fine. We're just glad to have you here today. I think I speak for myself and the rest of our group when I say, man, we love to speak to people who are involved in the community and who are a part of efforts to better and to also serve our people in a good and a positive way. So today, and I will tell you this, these questions, just so you know, they're written up by Ms. Tamaya Allen. She's not here with us today, but okay. She does a great job of combing for information. I always like to say doing her little ninja work to figure out what is going on and identifying people. So if there's anything that you want to add or update to this, we always ask people to please let us know. But we do our best to comb and get information on you all before we start. However, we're going to start with our first question. It's always what we like to start off with is we like to ask you a little bit about the history of your childhood, the experiences that you might have had that led you into the path or the career that you are in today. So if you just explain to our audience a little bit about your background, where you're from, some of the things that you did in your upbringing that led you to where you are.
Okay. Great. I'm originally from St. George, South Carolina. It's a rural area. I like to call myself a country girl.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
I have four brothers, and I like to tell people I came from a blended family background. My mom and dad split up when I was 2 years old, and so it was me and my brother. And so we actually had the pleasure of living with my mom sometime in Maryland. She moved to Baltimore, Maryland. And then my dad stayed in South Carolina. He was a military. And he, after getting out of the military, he lived in Santee, South Carolina. So every summer we had to flip-flop with them in holidays. But we actually stayed and lived with my grandmother, my mother's mother, down in St. George. So with that, me and my brother, we was grateful enough to get a blended family. We got two sisters from my mom. Being remarried, and three brothers from my dad. And so I truly tell people I know what a blended family looks like because we lived it. I had a wonderful father. He's deceased. He died almost 4 years ago around Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving time is a rough time for me because I'm his only daughter. But our mother's still alive. She lives in Maryland.
Blessings.
And I have three brothers out of the four. I lost my oldest brother to gun violence my first Mother's Day 25 years ago. Ooh. So I'll tell you a little bit more once we start talking about some of the services that a second chance does and why gun violence is so important to me. But our childhood was very good. I went to St. Augustine's College, got my undergrad in criminal justice, got my master's from Webster University, finishing up my PhD now. At age 55.
Ain't no time like the present, right?
Yes, because life happened. My background is social work. I worked with the Child Protective Services for almost 11 years in Dorchester County as a supervisor for investigations and treatment. I moved on to mental health, worked with ages 16 to 21, did a little bit with the federal government. Worked with the electronic monitoring. So my background is really rich. But in 2000, I got into the nonprofit world. That's how I was introduced to the nonprofit world in 2000. Well, at 2000, it was great. I was able to flourish. And in 2008, that's when life happened. What happened? Folks look at it and I often ask people, what does a justice-involved individual looks like? And they do not. They don't know what it looks like because it has no face. But for me, very dear, because that was the time in 2010, I found myself looking at a federal charge because I had taken a job as executive director in the Tri-County and everything went sour. Folks who might know, they might know about Berkeley Dorchester Economic Development. That was the nonprofit that I took over in 2005. That's the nonprofit that landed me in 2010, the end of 2010, 2 days before Thanksgiving to a federal camp down in Coleman's, Florida.
Whoa.
And at that time, I had an 18-year marriage. Our son was 6 years old. Our daughter was 12 years old. And I can tell you, I was angry as heck because I had put about 20-some years in the community. I had probably served on over probably 25 boards. I was in the media constantly of the good works that I was doing throughout the Tri-County and throughout the state. But at that time, it was Judge Duffy. Andy Savage was my attorney. I had a whole team. But I'm telling you, that's an experience I will never, ever forget. And that's how Second Chance was birthed because of my 25-month stint in Coleman's Florida camp. The first 6 months was really, really hell for me. I just couldn't believe it. I was angry with the community. I was angry with politicians. I was angry with God because I felt at that time I was a scapegoat.
Ooh.
And I tell people often, did I know about some of the things? Yes, I did. But I walked into a mine. And what could I do? Because how can someone with my education, background, professional experience, certifications, tell a federal judge that you knew about A, but you didn't know about B? He wasn't hearing it.
Right.
He was like, you're too smart for that. He was looking at the outside of me. And so. It ended up, we took a plea for conspiracy. And as you know, with federal, that's probably the only governing judicial part that has conspiracy. The state does not have that.
Nah.
Because of my work in the community, I got letters from former mayors, ombudsmen, councilmen, councilwomen. But all of that played good. But the judge ended up giving me a 37-month sentence. That was the smallest he could do. That's the lowest he could do based on my experience and the work that I did in the community. So I actually did 25 months. And in those 25 months, I'll go back, just like I said, the first 6 months, I just couldn't believe it. I was so angry. But as time moved on, a young man from Alabama came to the camp, and he was actually preaching that day. And we were required to camp. If anybody know about a federal camp, it's almost like going to boot camp or being in college. So there is no fence. There is no bars. There's no guns. It's a camp. But I often tell people I don't minimize that because you're not home. You're not with your husband, you're not with your family, your mom, dad, or your kids. But at that 6 month mark, this pastor came in. And we was required to go to church. And I only went because I did not want to get in trouble because I was angry with God. So I actually went that night because I had no choice. And I'll never forget this pastor. He came out, and by this time, it was about 700 women at the camp. And I'm talking about women from all walks of life. I'm talking judges, lawyers, congresswomen from Chicago, open heart surgeons. I mean, women, professional women.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, there was a few, there was drug dealers also that had worked their way down to a camp level that had actually been behind the fence. And so as I began to start looking, this pastor said there was a young lady in there from South Carolina. And by this time, at that 700 women, it's probably about 110 of us there from throughout the state of South Carolina. But the more he started to talk, I knew he was talking about me, but I said nothing because I was still so angry. But I'm going to fast forward it. At the end of the night, this pastor actually came through and looked at 700 women and he sought me out. But I knew when he was beginning to talk, he was talking about me.
Yeah.
And from that night on, my life changed at the camp. I began to start reading my Bible again. And when my family would come, because I had visits every week, every weekend, I just looked at it and said, you know what? I could have been, I could have been anything. I could have been sick. So I had to look at it, and I went to the verse in the Bible that that said about hiding, God was hiding you in his secret pavilion. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got peace at, that I felt me being at Coleman's camp was that pavilion he was hiding me in. So from that day forward, I actually started doing the work inside that I was doing outside. I helped about 37 women get their GED. Wow. Mm-hmm. I went out to Habitat to Humanities Monday through Friday, volunteering. It was almost like God was waiting for me to accept this assignment that he had given me. And then he opened up the doors. So wow. I found myself those last 19, 20 months being outside, and all I was doing was sleeping there. Mm-hmm. And that was a safe haven for me, because to be there and could not do the work that I was used to doing for the last 20 some years,
right.
I felt like my walls was closing in. So to fast forward, Second Chance Resource Center was birthed there. It was birthed at Coleman's camp down in Florida. When I came back home in 2013, I didn't know what to do. I just wanted to just go back in my house and go in a shell. Mm-hmm. And I started applying. And I actually got a lot of interviews. But what I found out from those interviews, there was so many discriminatory practices when folks start asking you questions when you have to check that box.
Right.
We know what box you're talking about.
Right? We're talking about that box.
Yeah.
Do you have a pass? Have you ever been incarcerated?
Yeah. Yeah.
And as many times as people like to minimize being to a camp, because I've never had on handcuffs. Right. I've never been in a police car. Right. I've never been in county jail. Mm-hmm. I've never experienced that. But what I experienced was being removed from my home.
Right.
And I self-surrendered. The judge gave me 6 months to get my affairs in order. So what you think about that? That's crazy, right?
Right.
You gotta explain that to our audience a little so they can understand what
you're
not a flight risk.
I mean, I had 6 months to get our children in order, to get our family affairs in order, make sure my husband had everything he needed to have in place. So when I come back, you know, we everything will be fine. But let me tell you this, what I did experience at the federal camp, I was able to come, I had 3 furloughs. Mm-hmm. And people say, what in the world is that? I was able to check out of the federal camp. I had a 12-hour furlough. I had a 36-hour furlough. And I had a 5-day furlough where I actually flew back home and helped my husband make sure all affairs were still in order and helped get our kids ready for school. It's wild, right?
That is wild.
But it really...
Does that make it harder then?
It was, you know what? It was hard for my parents and my grandparents them, because my mom was like, if you can come home, if you can check in and out of a federal camp, why you couldn't stay? Why could not be alternative sentencing?
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, if the system knows that you're not going to like... be out there doing nefarious things, right?
Exactly.
And they know that you're a social worker, you're going to do stuff for the community anyway. Why not just work it off by working for the community?
Or have like a monitor on and be at home.
Yeah. Check in.
Yeah.
What you doing? Oh, you're out saving kids in the day? All right. That's fine. Keep it going.
Yeah.
So that I think that was the furious part for my parents, especially my mom.
It's like a tease.
Right, because I get to come home for 5 days and then I have to go back. But I was happy because I got to sleep in my own bed. Right. I got to be around my family, my husband, my friends, things like that. But when it was time to go back, of course, it was like, oh my gosh, you have to go back. Mm. But one of the other good things that I got out of the camp, they started a class where you can become a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. So I was able, they chose 12 ladies, and I was one of the ladies that was chosen. So I did get my alcohol and license, drugs, license certification, and I still have those licenses today. So that was a good thing. That was really a good thing, because I probably wouldn't have gotten it outside because I was already in the working field doing what I need to do. Mm-hmm. So I did get that within those 20, 25 months. Also, one of the things happened was time for me to come home. I was thinking I was going to the halfway house here in Charleston. The halfway house is a federal and state halfway house. It holds 40 men and 8 females. And that could be, those 8 females could be federal or state. So we, and I know you got a question later about the community. Yeah, so I'm tying into this. Mm-hmm. There's only 8 placements for females.
Right. Great.
So when I got the call, we're talking halfway houses.
Right.
So when I got the call into my case manager's office, and she said that things have changed, then my personality changed because I already knew it was only 8 placements here. Yeah. So I thought she was calling me to tell me that I had to stay at the camp.
Rather than coming home to be at the halfway house for six months. Yeah.
But that was not what she was saying. She was like, calm down, calm down. So what really happened was I was the person chosen to be able to come, leave the camp and come straight home.
Wow. Okay.
They consider that a model.
Right. Right.
So I laugh. I still get a model. So I came straight home. I came straight home. And then I struggled with finding jobs. The first job I landed was an eye opener because I would have worked for free at this point because I wanted to get back into the community. Mm-hmm. And they used me. They needed to have their group home saved. And I went in. They had 3 months. I got everything in order within a month. Mm. So Department of Social Service came in and DJJ came in and they looked at this group home and the services was impeccable.
Wow.
At that time, they was paying me $18 an hour. Mm. When DJJ and DSS left and said they would be back in 3 years, I got called into the office 2 weeks later and they dropped me from $18 to $12. Then at that time, couple of weeks later, they dropped me from $12 to $8. And that's when I realized here's another discriminatory practice right. to justice-involved individuals.
We know that you can't get a job somewhere else. Yeah. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah. Right. Well, exactly. Yeah. I heard the female owner of it said, what is she going to do? She got a background. Mm. But at that point, 30. That's when I got my voice back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because I've always been an advocate for this disadvantaged, social economic individuals and families. And so that's when I got my voice back and I went home and told my husband about it and he said, quit. And I said, no, I'm still a professional.
Yep.
So I gave my 2 weeks notice.
There you go.
I exit. And I tell you this, I fast forward. Today, now that same company is willing to pay me $500 an hour to come in and do, consulting for them because they're losing their business.
Mm-hmm.
But of course I didn't take it because Second Chance is my baby.
Yeah.
It's my love. We are impacting lives every day because I'm a social worker. That's where the holistic model came from. It is trademarked.
Oh, wow.
Our holistic approach model is trademarked. It's been trademarked now for about 3 years. And we have served, I know you asking this question. Mm-hmm. I would say we have actually effectively served on the last 10 years about 3,600 individuals and their families.
Wow.
Our retention rate for jobs is 94%.
Wow.
Our recidivism rate is 97%.
Lord. Good Lord.
And we serve the whole person, the whole family. So we have a dynamic youth department,
mm-hmm.
A youth coordinator. We have a dynamic relink pathway to homes.
Mm-hmm.
We partner with Department of Corrections. We partner with the feds. We partner with the local detention centers. Mm-hmm. That's in the Tri-County in the Low Country. We have a reentry council that started 3 months ago. Second Chance is the lead on that reentry council for the South Carolina Department of Corrections. I am the chairperson, which is great because what we do is we help do that seamless process mm-hmm. of individuals that's being returned back to their community. Department of Corrections have 21 facilities, and we work with all 21 of those facilities. So everyone that's coming back to the Tri-County or to these areas, we get to touch them. I'll just use Tri-County.
Cool, man. So you're like the point of contact base. Yeah.
We have other community partners that do reentry, but I like to laugh and smile and pat my staff on the back because I see us as that catalyst. Mm-hmm. We are the engine that they're calling out because we do it holistically. Nice. Because on an average month, just from the Department of Corrections, we have 150 individuals coming back to the Tri-County, and that's just the Tri-County. So over a year, you're talking about 1,800 individuals. Do we touch all of them? No, we don't.
Right.
Yeah, because we just don't have the arm width.
Right.
But we do our best. Mm-hmm. We have 3 office locations. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we have the transitional house.
Yep.
So we're expanding rapidly. I'm happy because I just got notification on Tuesday that I have been selected to serve on the criminal justice coordinating council, which I really, really wanted that because it places us in a room where we really can expand the services to help individuals and families. I'm hoping, I'm not speaking out of turn, but I think I will be the first African-American female to sit on this council.
Wow. I have to say this too, while you're, because you all don't just return people, you restore people and their families. And this is one of the biggest things I've always like to make a point of when it comes to the quote unquote correctional facilities and rehabilitative units and et cetera, is going to recidivism and speaking about that, the fact that you're putting people back onto in the civilian world, haven't been given either training, resources, or a pathway to restore them as a citizen, as a full citizen.
Right.
Usually they're going
to bias on say it. The cultural bias. And then this cloak, the businesses could do whatever they want. And it's okay.
That's why I'm happy you said it from your story. So people realize, like you said, you weren't a violent offender or anything like that. And you were still getting the same.
Right. And clearly could do the work.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And they were benefiting from it.
Yes. Uh-huh. And they still just treated you the same way. They gave you that fence, that gate. The fence that exists outside to keep you from being able to move along. And that is a very harmful thing. I know, speaking personally, we have, I have family, I have a brother that went through the same situation and it's still affecting him to this day. And this has been over 12, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And you still have that issue of being able to get through and having to worry about that checkbox of just trying to get yourself back into the world to be a productive citizen is extremely difficult. One thing I do want to touch on, just a quick question to throw in there for you, is I like how your Second Chance Resource Center, we always hear everybody talking about second chances and folks deserving second chances. Do you truly believe that? And can you tell ways, of course, as you already told us about the ways that you offer support for them? But my thing is, that question, do you really believe that everyone deserves a second chance? And if you do have some cases that you can make inferences on how you've seen people improve through going through your programs, we'd love for you to talk about that just so our audience can hear some of those stories.
Yes, I truly, truly believe in second chances and that everyone does deserve a second chance. If they have a date where they're going to be released and coming back into the community, into their families, into society as a whole, they should be given that opportunity. Mm-hmm. We should not be looking in their rear view mirror. We should be looking forward because, yes, that's their past. Mm-hmm. Have they really been rehabilitated while being incarcerated? I hear people all the time say the prisons and the jails have not done their job. And I tell them, I beg to differ. They have done their job. Because people need to understand that the job of a prison facility and a jail facility is house. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're doing. They are housing. Mm-hmm. But it takes advocacy. It takes legislators. It takes the community as a whole to look at and say, what programs do we need inside of these facilities to help rehabilitate? So if they do not have the certifications and the simple, where they can get a GED or work on getting a high school diploma or some type of trade, then yes, we have failed them. Mm-hmm. But until we get our lawmakers and our churches and our communities and individuals going back and fighting for that, then we will constantly always say they have not done their job, but they're doing their job because their job is to house.
So you think this is an advocacy issue?
It's an advocacy issue.
We need to change what the job is.
Yeah.
Hey, when we start, just to pick back up where we were talking about the importance of advocacy and how the system that you get into whenever you are bought into a rehabilitative or detention center, et cetera, don't offer, and this is one of the things I thought that was sad, is like the limitation of the programs or programs being removed from those organizations or those bodies, and them expecting folks to come out and have skills, traits, and abilities to make a legal lifestyle. Could you explain how your program offers that to folks and some stories that you have out of your program, some folks who have had that ability to make that change and complete your programs?
Okay, yes. This December 31st will be 2 years that a Second Chance Resource Center started, Pathway to Homes. And that Pathway to Homes came straight out of the South Carolina Department of Corrections. We did a model with a young lady that had served 25 and a half years. And she was coming out on December 31st, which was it was also her birthday. Believe it or not. And that was on a Friday. So she, December 31st was on a Saturday. So she came out that Friday. And as you know, most places are closed because it's Christmas, right. It's New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So we opened up and we worked with her. But prior to that, 6 months to her being released, we bought the Pathway to Homes into the South Carolina Department of Corrections. And we started working with this young lady. We did an assessment. We started working with the reentry director. And we identified all the needs that this young lady would have coming out after 25 and a half years. So we were able to connect her with mental health, with alcohol and drug, with Voc Rehab, with the education component, the housing component. What we realized, she did have her mother that was still alive, so she was going home. We did everything that we knew that this young lady would need prior to getting out. She had, Department of Corrections was great. She had her picture ID.
Wow.
From DMV.
Really?
Yes, so they're doing that. They're doing great. I have to give it to Deputy Jake Gatson and his staff up there. But she had her picture ID. She had her Social Security card.
When she came out?
When she came out. It's called Pathway to Homes. That's what about folks.
Yeah, I just get one of those. No, but yeah, and then you don't have transportation.
And a six-week process.
Right. It's terrible. And then imagine it being on
New Year's Eve.
And you just stuck.
Yeah, so it made us happy. So when she came out, it was a seamless process. Mm-hmm. The only services that we had to make sure we connected before January 1st was get her signed up for the Affordable Care Act, which is healthcare, because you cannot sign up for that while you're still incarcerated, and you cannot sign up for food stamps while you're still incarcerated.
That's a good point.
But everything else was already in place. It was a seamless process. Everybody knew this young lady was coming home. They was going to be closed. Second Chance was going to be open. Her probation officer knew she was coming home. So the probation officer made herself available. When she got to Charleston, she went and saw the probation officer, and then she came to Second Chance.
Wow.
It was, and I'm telling you, the Pathway to Home program is great. We're doing it more and more now. This young lady was also featured on Channel 5 at our annual resource and health fair because she is so successful. Google has also picked her up. because we got a grant from Google, and she's being featured. Yeah, she's being featured of the progress that she have done. So guess what? She still lives with mom.
Mm-hmm.
She is a supervisor on her job.
Nice.
She is a owner of a brand new car. Because remember, December 31st is going to be 2 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
That's a lot.
Oh, yeah. She has not one, but two bank accounts.
What?
And looking at taking some classes, home ownership classes, yeah, to be a homeowner in 2024.
Oh. What? Yeah. After being incarcerated for
25 and a half years.
Oh. Hard pause and like having to start everything up from scratch in 2 years is absolutely amazing.
She put in all the work. I tell people, we led the guide. We gave her the resources. We pointed out the resources. We was that liaison. But I give it all to her because she was determined and she had the support. So that's what we need from the communities. That's what we need from the legislators. That's what we need for people to know that if we're going to restore people, you got to have the resources.
Here's a bus ticket and hope that things don't get nasty because,
It's already bad.
So because of your experience and because of being able to like see in the work that you do, like all of these gaps that need to be filled in, you're just kind of coming in and helping them see, and I guess kind of arranging this, like, you know, advocating for what is needed. Is that?
Yes. Because what happened when I came back home, I still had my house. Mm-hmm. I still had my, my foundation, my support was still solid because I had visitors, my family and friends and sorority sisters. I had a visit every weekend down in Florida. So I had that. But when I came home, what I didn't have was a buy-in to get a job.
Right.
So that's why it was so hard. So I look at it and say, if I struggled on that end, what happens to individuals that do not have the support or the education or the professional or work experience? So I took that along with my case management experience and I burst second chance. So I know where the holes are.
I'm
going to tie this in what you how we started the dialogue, the discussion, conversation. The fact that you said, like, when you went in, after you got over your anger, you realized you were put in that position for a reason. If you weren't in that position and saw what was going on, you wouldn't have been able to be a light to these other folk. Because, like you said, I hate to say it, it takes a particular type of person to be able to then be a resource to folk after something like that. Right. You had to have the strength. You had to have the determination, tenacity, but you also had to have the education and the professional experience. We usually don't get professionals like you in those positions that come out and say, you know what, I'm gonna go make it better. I'm gonna make it easy on the next person that comes out. Because normally, what would you do? You'd go home, have your joy, enjoy your life, forget about it, move past.
And I can tell you, that's what's happening to the ladies, the judges, the lawyers, the open heart surgeons, the vice presidents of some of these universities that was in there. They have moved on. They have put it as a past and they have moved on. But someone has to stand up and be a voice. So I am that lived experience. So that's why when individuals come in and they see me and I took all my degrees and certifications off my office walls. And so when they come in, I take my suits off. And when they come in and they start talking, they can't say, what do you know? Because you got all of this. I don't tell them because they when they come in, they don't see any of that stuff on my office anymore. I let them talk and then they say, why are you in it?
Yeah, and why are you so invested?
Yes. And so then I begin to tell my story.
Yeah.
Because here again, as I started off, what do a justice involved individual looks like?
Hey,
doesn't have a face. Yes.
Oh, you're a blessing to the community. Wow. Good gracious. All right, I do have two more questions for you before we wrap up. And I know we've been touching on this anyway, just speaking about the system. But could you explain, just give us a little touch on this. How do you, some ways in which you feel that the criminal justice system fails our society in the sense of either through the sentencing or how it's applied to people based on their actions? Do you think that we are over penalizing people and we're over-incarcerating folks? Is that an issue that you think that we're seeing? Or is it doing its job properly? We just have a horrible back end of taking care of folks as they're coming out of the system.
It's all the above that you said. We are over-sentencing. We're not providing the justice-involved individual, like they like to say, returning citizens, with the resources that they could really provide inside to help. And it's just a lot. And I've seen the difference in color, male, female. It's all the above. We really need to have a look at the criminal justice reform system as a whole to see what can we do better. But I can tell you, they're still on that thing looking at third grade education.
That's real.
And looking at building more prisons. We need more transitional houses. Mm-hmm. We need more educational programs. Mm-hmm. We need more workforce programs and transportation.
Mm-hmm. That's real, especially in a rural state like this. Mm-hmm. Like you get outside the city and you're
by yourself.
Stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no access to economics.
Yes.
And that leads to crime.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And now, I'm going to tell you this right quick. We just got a grant for justice-involved individuals working with opioids and fentanyl. Now we got something else on top of all these things that you just talked about.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, it's massive. We really need to get on it. Just check us out. We're serious about what we're doing. We're committed to what we're doing. We have a great staff. We have great community partners. And we also have those partners that didn't want to give me that second chance almost 13 years ago.
They are
back at the table. And I'm grateful and I'm humbled by that because it speaks that I was able to convert and let them know everybody deserves a second chance if they got a date and they're coming back home.
Yeah, you turn the non-believers into believers.
Yes.
You are like a prophet out here. I ain't going to lie. You don't get to hear people talk like this.
If folks out there like what they hear.
Yeah.
Taking donations. How do people support your work?
Yes, we definitely. They can visit our website and they can do donations. We're looking for houses. We got a male house. We need a female house.
Well, speaking of which, we're horrible with this. We like shameless plugs. When you say that, go ahead, give me information. Let me know. Like if you said a website, tell them what the website is.
We want them to know. The website is www.ascresource.org. We can be reached at 843-926-2808. Our address is 3255 Landmark Drive, Suite 301. That's North Charleston, South Carolina. And just like I said, if you visit our website, you will see all three of our locations.
Perfect.
And don't forget, we have a Phoenix transitional house that can house up to 12 males. And it's doing what it's due. And they pay nothing to stay at this house. So please, if you're out there, you're compassionate about helping justice-involved individuals and their families, donate, donate, donate. This week, we're actually at the Coastal Carolina Fair. This is our second year being there. We are at the Freedom Hall building. We are at booth 47 and 50. All of our proceeds go to our Youth Hope Initiative. These are young men and women that are getting out of the Department of Juvenile Justice System. So we serve the whole family. Man. We go from zero to death.
Man, I'm not gonna lie. You made my day. That's positive. Because normally when you speak on issues like this, it can be a little bit depressing. I'm telling you, I was not depressed at all.
Okay.
I was very much, excited. You got me all reared up. You got me thinking about it in a different way as well. And I know from looking at what you do have available and et cetera, I'm telling you, people who listen to our show, if you know anybody that is a justice-involved individual that needs assistance, or if you are wondering or have questions about things in your area, specifically if you're in the Lowcountry area, these are going to be some resources that you're going to want to put those people in contact with so that they can get some of that help and advocacy that they're going to need moving forward. But I must say...
even if you are not in the South Carolina area, you're hearing this, you can call us. Because we started out as a web-based polder, in 2013. So we actually have clients in Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida.
Okay.
Because we started as a web-based portal.
Once you have the resources.
Once you have the resources.
Yeah.
All states have some of the same resources.
And I'm sure there's people in other states that are trying to get this kind of thing going. So let's get some community crosstalk.
And yes. Definitely. Yes, yes. And we do have a big gun violence prevention component.
On that for us. Yeah, speak on that for us. I know right now in the state, it's like, oh, my Lord, yes. Especially with the youth.
Yes. Second Chance Resource was one of the 13 nonprofits back in December that got $100,000 from the city of North Charleston. Chief Reggie Burgess was the chief.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw the need to embrace and help nonprofit organizations. So Second Chance Resource Center was one of those nonprofits. We have partnered with Positive Vibe, Roger Nave Smith, Inc. That's executive director Ronald Smith. He lost his daughter to gun violence 2 years ago. She was 14. So we are doing the holistic approach. We're killing it with gun violence. We've got all kinds of stuff. We got a 1-800 hotline number that will be coming out on November 5th through Positive Vibe. Gun violence is a real issue. We got to get these guns off the street.
Yes.
We got to get the guns out of the hands of our youth, our next generation.
I agree. I definitely agree. We got to have ways for them to deal with conflict outside of using guns. And I'm going to say, man, I greatly appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up?
I just want people to understand that everyone deserves a second chance. If they got a date coming out, we need to embrace that. We still do work with individuals that have long, long sentences.
Mm-hmm.
We send them emails. If they're on the federal side, we do CoreLink. We connect with them. We go to court. We support the families. We have family support groups weekly, different types of groups, parenting, all that stuff. Just know it's holistic. If you think of anything, it's holistic. Second Chance can connect the dots. Building families, strengthening lives.
Awesome, man. I'm going to say DJ and what?
Mike.
Skip, who's over in the other room right now, and our esteemed guest, Miss Patsy Gardner. We appreciate having you on our podcast today. We're going to make sure that we do get this Clarion call out and spread this news as far and as wide as we possibly can on our platform. Anything that you have or you're doing in the future, any updating, upcoming events, if you have something that you need to get the word, please let us know.
January, we will be starting our own channel, TV channel.
Oh.
And it will be a Second Chance Resource Center. And the theme will always be You Matters.
Yeah. Okay.
It will be on Pearl TV. It will be on demand. If they got smart TVs, they'll be able to pick us up. That's starting the third Wednesday in January.
Wow. Third Wednesday in January. So we're going to have to return and follow up our conversation.
What are y'all doing? I got so many questions.
You may have to sit and talk to Mike before you leave. Cause that's who you need to speak to about this. But, I'm going to wrap us up cause I don't want to hold too much of your time. And plus if we're good on time, y'all, we may be able to go see the fair. So, the Hilltop Club podcast, we want to thank everybody for being here today. We want to also ask our audience if you have somebody next to you or if you don't, go talk to your neighbor, man. Tell somebody that you love them, that you appreciate them being around you and being positive influence on your life. If you do have that around you, it's always good to let those people know that they are that you appreciate them. And today, I just want to let Ms. Gardner know I appreciate her for coming on today and sharing this information. Yeah.
Link Studio for hosting us. Yes,
we got to say that. Yo, shout out to Holiday X, Mr. Adams. One of our esteemed sponsors and our promoters or whatever we do. He always is looking out for us. I want to thank Link Studio here. Matter of fact, I will make sure that we throw that in because you will see it. If you listen to our podcast, if you ever listened before, you know you are going to get a drop. There will be a nice little drop of advertisement for Link Studios out there. But we want to thank him today because we are recording in his studios today. We're in the podcast room. They do have this available if you do want to come in and use it for content creation. But signing off for the Hilltop Glove podcast, this is DJ and what?
Mike.
Skip in the room. And of course, it's Patsy Gardner. We want to thank you so much. Everybody have a blessed one. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Peace.
That's it for today's episode of the Hilltop Glove podcast.
Make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and other platforms.
Also, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Hilltop Glove.